This is an ABC podcast.
You're listening to The Country Hour on ABC Radio South Australia and Broken Hill.
Good afternoon. Thanks for joining me for The Country Hour. I'm Megan Hughes. Coming up, the time for autonomous vehicles in agriculture is here. But is the industry ready for it? And you may struggle to get your favourite cuts of chicken as another sector succumbs to COVID-19 related worker shortages. I'll have more for you before 1 o'clock. But first this afternoon, Lucerne seed growers will soon have access to a new chemical to help treat aphids. Scott Hutchings, the chair of Lucerne Australia, says they've been granted an emergency permit for Mainman after reports the insects are building a resistance to the usual chemical treatment. Mr. Hutchings says they're also hoping the weather stays hot and sunny to keep the bugs at bay.
Locally, the crop is looking very good. We've had ideal conditions for lucerne with sort of hot, dry periods, and it seems to be setting quite well. And we particularly don't have a lot of summer weeds, so all the bees are working the lucerne and they haven't got many other options to forage on. So at this stage, the crops are setting particularly well.
And would you be expecting better tonnages than last year, about the same?
Yeah, at this stage, you know, locked up to lucerne seed production is slightly higher than last year, and the crops look to be setting slightly better than last year as well. We did have a later rain last year that interrupted the late crops, so at this stage, yeah, things are looking quite solid.
And you mentioned that there's more lucerne seed in the ground this year?
Just slightly more. It's not a huge industry, so we're probably looking at 5 to 10% more area locked up for lucerne seed this year.
How's the lucerne industry doing at the moment?
Yeah, at this stage things look particularly good. Last year was a sellout situation, and basically on the back of quite high livestock prices, a lot of opportunity dryland lucerne hasn't been locked up for seed production and people just prefer to graze it. So it's taken a lot of probably uncertified area and lower yielding area off the table. So it means people are just locking up core kind of irrigation paddocks and those dryland paddocks that continually perform. So the total area is contracted, but it's a better quality of area that's being locked up for seed.
When it comes to exporting, so a lot of this seed does go overseas. How is it looking this year, hearing more stories of shipping delays and all that sort of stuff?
Yeah, at this stage it's a bit of an unknown. We know there's not much seed in stores locally, which means that there will be good demand. It's just a matter of being able to ship it. And lucerne traditionally doesn't go in one big bunch after harvest anyway. It's often dribbled out over the whole year into various areas. So we may see that, you know, as long as we can get containers, and it's not huge volume as in bulk, it's more container shipping. So we're hoping that it'll still be quite a reasonable, we'll be able to move the seed relatively easily.
In terms of when the harvest is starting, is there any idea of a date yet?
Yeah, so we'll probably see dryland harvest start late January, early February, with those that are just purely done off annual rainfall because we've had no summer rain at this stage. So our most ripe crops would be sitting around 60% right now, which means they're probably about a week or two off desiccation and then another week to 10 days off harvest. So yeah, probably about 3 weeks we'll see the first of the harvest start, and the bulk of the irrigation harvest will start in probably the start of March to mid-March is generally the main period. We've had a few pest issues we've dealt with over the last few years, and we're seeing some changes in chemistry that will help that. So we'll probably see an emergency permit for Mainman come through in the next few weeks, which will give growers another opportunity to control aphids in their lucerne.
And have aphids been a big issue?
Yeah, so in the last couple of years we've seen a build-up of resistance to chlorpyrifos within blue-green aphid populations within the lucerne. So basically we're getting significant failures out of those products. And so we've actually looked at some alternative chemistry and trying to get that registered or permits for being able to use those chemicals in the lucerne crops.
Mm. And you're expecting it to come through pretty soon.
We have had that grant that has actually been approved for a product called Mainman, and that will be available to Lucerne seed growers only in the next few months.
Is it too late to use it now? Will this be something that can be used next year when...
No, possibly. Usually we see that the worst problems come in March. What we might find, some years are really bad for aphids. This year, but being particularly hot and dry and we haven't had a lot of moisture, we may find that we don't see those pests later in the season. Last year was particularly bad following the kind of a late January rain and very mild conditions in the second half of the season. But, you know, every year is different and we may see that when we might need those products, but it's good to have them available if we require them.
In terms of the chemical itself, like, have you been pushing for this for a number of years or...?
Yes, yeah, so we do go, as an industry body, we're constantly looking at probably alternative and particularly softer chemistry to be made available to our Lucerne seed growers. So this has been, you know, we're constantly looking at what's coming through and whether it has a fit in a small industry like Lucerne. And we, through AgriFutures, we apply for minor use permits and emergency use permits so we can keep ahead with that technology, because traditionally, being a small industry, there hasn't been a lot of new products registered, which means we don't have a lot of different chemicals to rotate through the industry.
That's Scott Hutchings, the chair of Lucerne Australia. Meanwhile, Grains Australia CEO Jonathan Wilson has resigned from the position. Director Andrew Young is assuming the role of interim CEO in an executive director capacity. Mr. Young is currently chair of Western Australia's largest pork producer, West Pork, and a director of Plum Grove. Imagine driving past your neighbour's property. There's a tractor tilling the ground, but as you drive closer, you realise there isn't anyone behind the wheel. The tractor is driving itself. It might sound like the future, but with the unveiling of a fully autonomous tractor last week in the US, the future is right on our doorstep. Professor Craig Bailey runs the Centre of Agriculture Engineering at the University of Southern Queensland. He tells Jodie Gunders it is a logical next step for the industry.
For a long time now, industry's been looking forward to the next step, I guess, in terms of this sort of innovation. If you look at the current model tractors that farmers have access to, many of the features leading up to full autonomy are already on board those machines. And so the last step is really now taking the driver out of the cab. And obviously that opens up a world of possibilities for farmers in terms of how they use the labour force they've got, how they get better utilisation out of their machinery. So there's a lot of advantages to this sort of innovation.
Autonomy in agriculture has been discussed as something to look forward to in the future. We've known that it's coming, but some time off. Have we reached a tipping point now where we'll start to see some more wide-scale adoption?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, there's a whole spectrum of technologies on board these machines. There's a lot of opportunity in exploiting what's already there, but then also there's the additional benefits in terms of what full autonomy brings. There are a couple of different components to autonomy. One is taking the driver out of the cab. So, again, getting better utilisation out of that machine so you can operate that machine 24 hours a day, maybe 7 days a week. Maybe also fulfilling labour shortages in peak parts of the season, maybe harvest or planting and those sorts of times. But the other thing that autonomy brings to farming, which people overlook, is the opportunity to do things with more precision. And so what we're seeing on these machines is that not only are you taking a driver out of the cab, but autonomy is actually controlling some of the aspects of what that machine actually does so that it can execute with greater precision.
So would it be things like, you know, where you have soil compaction and so you could sort of move it over slightly to make sure that you're not compacting that soil more than it needs to be?
Where it might play out is that you might go to a smaller machine because you can get better utilisation out of it. So farmers now are going to larger machines to try and get over their ground quickly, to try and execute, you know, farming operations at the right time. But if you've now got a machine that you can utilise 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, then all of a sudden you might say, well, I actually don't need that horsepower. I don't need that size of that machine. I can actually step it back a couple of notches and use a lighter machine in the field, which then has implications around things like soil compaction. So there are some spin-off benefits, such as soil compaction, depending on machinery options.
Do you think this will be the year that we actually see this tractor in operation in Australia?
Well, I'd hope to see, and I'm certainly putting a bit of pressure on these guys to move some of the technology that we see in North America into the Australian market. So most of the large North American manufacturers tend to use Australia as a bit of a proving ground for technologies. Australia and the US market is actually linked, so their regions tend to be Australian and US connected together. And just, you know, in terms of some of our relationships and our research partnerships with the manufacturers such as John Deere, certainly motivating very hard to get that technology into the Australian marketplace. So we can actually, you know, use it under our conditions around the sort of use cases that we might be wanting to use that technology for and have some input into the development of that tech as well.
That's Professor Craig Bailey, the Director of the Centre of Agriculture Engineering at the University of Southern Queensland, speaking there with Jodie Gunders. Now, you can read more on this story on the ABC Rural website. It's 12:15. I'm Megan Hughes. The Australian wine industry is continuing to look for new markets in 2022. After a difficult year dealing with China's tariffs, Rachel Triggs from Wine Australia is optimistic about the opportunities for the industry. She tells Eliza Burlarch sustainability is becoming more important to securing export sales.
We're focused in at Wine Australia in 2022 really on innovation, accelerating innovation, so to drive productivity growth, sustainability and resilience, and ensuring that we're really well positioned to respond and adapt to the emerging risks of the 21st century.
What are some of those risks at this moment in time?
Look, there are always climate mitigation activities that are front and centre, so climate mitigation activities in a vineyard and winery to help businesses reduce their carbon footprint and input costs. We're looking at ways that we can help businesses to improve their sustainability practices or improve vine health and productivity and contribute to environmental stewardship, as well as helping to meet regulatory requirements of export markets and demand for suppliers and consumers for sort of the clean and green products. So we're seeing a real trend, not just domestically, but across the globe, whereby retailers, consumers really are demanding products that meet the sustainability credentials. We're seeing a lot of the big retailers, particularly through the Nordic countries and the UK, looking at implementing sustainability requirements into their buying guides. So we're very focused on this sustainability piece at the moment, and we will be into 2022. It'll be a major focus for us. As part of that, very important that we encourage uptake of sustainable wine growing in Australia. So Australian wine producers do have a sustainability program available to them. It's a research-backed certification program for businesses looking to enhance their sustainability practices and benchmark their vineyards or their winery against other producers. So that sustainability piece really is paramount importance to us coming into 2022.
When that push was launched, I think a few months ago, what has the take-up been like?
It's been good thus far. So we've got 700 participants in Sustainable Wine Growing Australia, and certainly a lot more interest, a huge amount of interest. And I mean, there are so many reasons that producers, growers should be signing on to this program. Not only are there inherent benefits in being sustainable, but it really is, I think, one of these things where you're either on the bus or you're not. I think the writing is on the wall where we're going to have to adopt these sustainable practices. We're going to have to make sure that we really deeply understand the requirements of the retailers, both domestically overseas, and that we deeply understand consumer preferences in this space.
Export markets for Australian wines in 2021 saw quite a bit of movement towards exports to the UK and parts of Asia, even to Ukraine. What else is Wine Australia doing to try to grow and diversify Australia's export market for wine?
We're working very closely with government and with the sector to build export capability and connect exporters with new opportunities in market through a market diversification strategy. And to help that, we've developed an online platform, Connect. So Connect is an online marketplace, basically, that aims to connect Australian wine producers that are looking to spruik their wares across the globe with buyers in those markets.
That's Wine Australia's Rachel Triggs speaking there with Eliza Burlarch. Now it's time to have a look at the markets. Peter Kerr has all the results from the Mount Gambier cattle sale.
Good afternoon, Megan. This is the Mount Gambier cattle report for 12th of January. Numbers these is 1,586 head of live weight and open auction cattle. be sold to the regular field of trade and processor buyers, with restocker and feeder orders also active over the offering. Quality was generally good across the pens, with the market selling to dearer rates this week. Filly steers to the trade range from 470 to 552 cents. He lift 12 cents with similar heifers, making from 513 to 570. Feeders are active on steers from 400 to 541 cents, and on the heifers up to 552, as restockers source lighter steers up to 559 and heifers to 572 cents a kilogram. Yearling numbers were small, with processors operating to 438 cents on steers, and most of these going to the feeders from 418 to 535 cents, with a heifer portion to the trade ranging from 450 to 524, with feeder activity to 512 cents a kilogram. Brown season bullocks are also small in number, as they return from only 480 to 490 cents, with an isolated sale to 542 cents, with feeder activity from 468 to 492 cents a kilogram. Crown heifers made from 410 to 494 as manufacturing steers, range from 350 to 388 cents. Heavy cows made up a large percentage of the offering, to be 15 cents better in price, as they returned from 300 to 355, with lighter types selling up to 306 cents, with feeders active from 245 to 308 cents a kilogram. A handful of heavy bulls made from 300 to 320 cents, as lighter types made from 498 to 516 cents a kilogram to feed on. This has been Peter Kerr for the MLA's National Livestock Reporting Service.
Now John Traeger has the Dublin sheep and cattle results.
Good afternoon. Quality was extremely mixed, as agents offered 6,000 lambs and 2,000 sheep to open the 2022 selling season. Few young lambs came forward, with older lambs generally lacking in finishing condition. The usual trade buyers were in attendance and only operated on the better finished lambs, with small butcher orders and restockers putting a floor in easing prices. Sheep quality was again good, however prices were back considerably on the previous sale here under indifferent competition. Light young lambs sold from $66 to $126. Light trade weights ranged from $146 to $164, with heavy trade weights making $180 to $198 a head. Light older lambs sold from 104 to 138, as light trade weights made from 130 to 164. Medium trade weights sold from 156 to 172, as heavy weights ranged from 169 to 196, with a few extreme heavyweights selling from 190 to a sale top of $222 per head. The few hoggets on offer ranged from 158 to $200, with ram lambs selling from 140 to $200 per head. Light ewes sold to $70, with the bulk of the heavyweights selling from $130 to $142, as the few wethers on offer sold from $130 to $142 per head. Young merino ewes sold from $108 to $136, with rams selling from $112 to $178. Meanwhile, in the cattle market, quality was generally fair to good, as agents offered 250 live weight cattle and 55 open auction calves. Competition came from the usual trade and processor buyers, independent butchers, along with restockers and limited feeder activity. A large percentage of the offering came from the West Coast area, and these presented in ideal condition. Cows were mostly of heavier weights, and these met with subdued competition. The few Vela steers sold from 500 to top of 600 cents, as Vela heifers ranged from 572 to 574 cents on a limited supply. Yearling steers were mostly medium to heavy weights descriptions, with feeder sales from 550 to 558 cents, as processors were active from 590 to 598 cents, with similar weighted yearling heifers selling from 408 to a top of 574 cents. The best of the grown steers sold to 556 cents, with grown heifers selling to 500 cents. Heavy cows sold from 250 to 260 cents, as yearling bulls to restockers sold from 348 to 412 cents. Heavy bulls to the trade ranged from 250 to 290 cents. This is John Traeger at the South Australian Livestock Exchange for MLA's National Livestock Reporting Service and the Country Hour.
ABC Radio. Heatwave information.
A severe heatwave watch and act warning is in place today for the upper and lower southeast, the Riverland and Murraylands, and northeast pastoral districts. There are also several low-intensity heatwaves forecast for other parts of the state. Babies, young children, the elderly, pregnant women, and people who are already unwell are especially at risk in a severe heatwave, but even healthy people should take care. Take action to make sure you and your family stay well during this heatwave event. If you're feeling unwell, contact your your local doctor or for immediate medical attention, phone 000. Now it's time for a look at the weather today. Senior forecaster Hannah Marsh joins me from the Bureau of Meteorology. Good afternoon, Hannah.
Good afternoon, Megan.
It's pretty hot across a lot of the state today. How long can we expect this weather to hang around?
Yeah, absolutely. We've got a complex low-pressure trough, which is currently sitting through Adelaide to Oodnadatta. It's very slowly moving eastwards and will continue to do so on Thursday and Friday. And with this, we're looking at very hot conditions ahead of it, but starting to cool a little bit behind, but still remaining mild to warm behind it. We are looking at some convection just starting to develop at the moment on the ranges, and there is the possibility of seeing some showers or thunderstorms over the eastern districts and parts of the central districts, including the Mount Lofty ranges and Mid-North ranges this afternoon. And the chance of thunderstorms or the chance of seeing severe thunderstorms is possible about those ranges, with heavy rainfall, damaging winds and hail possible through this area as we head into the afternoon period. We also have a coastal wind warning for the lower southeast for both today and tomorrow. As mentioned, we're still looking at fairly humid conditions over the agricultural area today. And we do have northerly winds ahead of that moderate to fresh southwest to southerly change, which has moved through the west. As we head into tomorrow, we're looking at the trough slowly moving eastwards and therefore taking with it the slight chance of showers and thunderstorms. So they will be confined to eastern parts tomorrow. We are still looking at humid conditions over central and eastern parts of the agricultural area, and temperatures generally will be mild to warm near southern and western coasts, grading to hot inland and very hot over the northeast pastoral district and the north of the northwest pastoral district. Winds will still be moderate to fresh southeast to northeasterly, and they will be tending southwest to southerly in the west and extending throughout during the evening. Then as we head into Friday, all that shower and thunderstorm activity will have moved out to the east. So we're just left with the slight chance of seeing some shower activity about southern Kangaroo Island and the lower southeast. Otherwise, we're looking at dry conditions. Generally mild to warm about the southern and western coasts, grading to very hot in the north. And we've got moderate south to southwesterly winds, and they will be fresh at times about the coast. Then returning to pretty stable conditions on Saturday, again just with that slight chance of seeing some showers about southern coasts and ranges and the southeast districts. But we do start getting some moisture building in the northwest of the state as we start heading towards Sunday and looking at this moving across the north of the state into the new week. At this stage, cumulative rainfall totals until midnight Sunday are expected to generally be less than 2 millimetres, but increasing to 2 to 10 millimetres about the lower southeast district and also the far northwest of the state. Falls of 2 to 10 millimetres are possible with thunderstorms, and local heavy falls of 10 to 30 millimetres are possible with thunderstorms about and east of the ranges today and tomorrow.
So, looks like there is some rain around.
Yeah, absolutely. We are looking at it as being quite convective, so it's one of those situations where it will be quite isolated, but there is the potential for those higher falls with the thunderstorms.
Fantastic. Thank you so much, Hannah.
Thank you.
That was Hannah March, the senior forecaster from the Bureau of Meteorology. Now, we'll just have a look at what's happening in the western parts of New South Wales. In the upper western part, a very hot day today, partly cloudy, a medium chance of showers. In the southeast, a slight chance elsewhere, the chance of a thunderstorm in the afternoon and evening. Winds east to northeasterly, 15 to 25 kilometres an hour, tending north to northeasterly, 25 to 35 kilometres an hour during the morning. Overnight temperatures falling to 23 to 29 degrees, with daytime temperatures reaching 37 to 44 degrees. In the lower western parts, a hot day, partly cloudy, a medium chance of showers and the chance of a thunderstorm. Winds easterly 20 to 25 kilometres an hour, turning northeasterly 15 to 25 kilometres an hour early in the morning, then increasing to 25 to 35 kilometres an hour. Overnight temperatures falling to 21 to 27 degrees, with daytime temperatures reaching 33 to 40 degrees. It's 12:30.
You're listening to The Country Hour. For more stories from across the country, go to abc.net.au/rural. On ABC Radio Adelaide, South Australia and Broken Hill, this is Megan Hughes.
Megan Hughes with you this afternoon. Thanks for joining me. You may struggle to get your favourite cuts of chicken as another industry falls victim to COVID-related worker shortages. And after having our borders locked down for almost 2 years, do you think we'll see the same amount of holidaymakers come back into Australia?
So traditionally, they've come out of the United Kingdom, France and Germany. They've represented about a third of our working holiday visas. But what we can see moving forward is the Asian market's really developing, particularly the opportunity to combine work, travel and study.
I'll have more for you on that story before 1 o'clock, but first, news headlines with Pat Martin.
Good afternoon. The state government says it will be mandatory for people to report positive at-home COVID test results, despite Premier Stephen Marshall yesterday indicating it wouldn't be. The opposition says a mandate is needed to ensure the full picture of the state's COVID situation is known. Health Minister Stephen Wade says the rule will come into force when the scheme rolls out from tomorrow. Farmers say produce is rotting in the fields as workers are forced into isolation due to the Omicron wave. Supermarkets across the country are struggling to stock their shelves amid major supply chain problems. Critical industries met the federal government overnight to discuss easing isolation rules for coronavirus close contacts to try and ease the problems. And Argentina is facing a historic heat wave, temporarily making the country the hottest place on the planet. With temperatures of around 45 degrees Celsius, it briefly took over from parts of Australia that cooled during the night. Extreme weather has caused unusual amounts of wildfires in Argentina and has also led to a major river dropping to a nearly 80-year low water level. More ABC News at 1 o'clock.
That was Pat Martin with today's news headlines. Now, farmers are assessing the damage after storms hit the Riverland last night. Strong winds, hail and heavy rain hit towns in the west of the region with 13 millimetres in 10 minutes at Walker Flat and more than 30 mils recorded at Overland Corner. Sunland's stone fruit grower Hayden Rogers has been out checking his crop for damage. Good afternoon, Hayden.
G'day, how are you?
Good. Now, what was the storm like at your place?
It was pretty vicious. It was just started off, a few clouds came over and a few spots of rain, and then all of a sudden it was all hell broke loose. So pretty much sideways rain and hail mixed in and, yeah, pretty strong wind.
Did it stay around for long?
I reckon 10 minutes. I was actually on the way home from town and pulled over under a tree and then drove home through pretty much flooded roads, not looking forward to seeing what had happened at home. And, a bit of fruit on the ground, but luckily it was all coming from the same direction that the rose run. So it's, the first few trees copped it, and after that it was a bit protected.
Well, that's good to hear, because I saw a photo that you'd shared on social media of a peach that was hit by hail and it looked like it copped a bit of damage. So how big were the hailstones?
Probably the size of a small marble. But then there was the odd bigger one in there, so you could really hear that thud on the car. But I had a lot of leaf on the trees as well, a lot of growth, because it's a lighter crop, and I think that's where it saved them as well, because they're sort of tucked in underneath the growth.
Yeah.
So I picked this morning, and it's actually not too bad. There's a bit of stuff on the ground, but that means whatever's left on the tree is going to be bigger this year, so I might have to get some deeper trays.
Yeah, well, silver lining, is that the case?
Yeah, well, I've also got pumpkin and sweet corn in, and they love the rain. And it's nice to have a bit of moisture in the ground. So.
And how did they fare in everything? Were they pretty protected?
Yeah, they're between the fruit trees. So I had the odd hole in the leaf, but there's nothing like a bit of rain. That they're actually, you can see they've grown just from that overnight. So, yeah, what's good for one thing is maybe not so good for another. But, yeah, it's just part and parcel. We've missed out the last few years, so I guess it was about our turn for a bit of hail.
So you hadn't gotten those storms that had come through the region late last year?
No, we just had a bit of wind. But I've been here for 10 years and I've never had a hail event, whereas for a kilometre either side of me, they've had real bad hail a couple of times, which have wiped them out. And, yeah, I've been lucky enough to dodge it.
Yeah, but, wow.
It was, I guess that's what the Riverland's all about. I could see it coming on the radar and it looked like it was just going to miss me. I was definitely on the edge.
So you don't even think that you copped the full brunt of it?
No, I was on the side. I saw a video from someone that's got almonds about a kilometre away and they had pretty much a carpet of hail. But I think mine was a bit more rain mixed in. But it was funny, within 15 minutes of the storm, you could hear chainsaws starting up all around the neighbourhood sort of thing.
They don't muck around, do they?
Nah, straight into it. And they're still going today. So I noticed the neighbours lost their fence and another bloke's trampoline was about 200 metres in the paddock. So, yeah, it comes through with a bit of a gust.
What are you hearing from your neighbours?
Well, it was all dire straits at first. A few of them were drowning their sorrows. But this morning with the sun out, all the plants are standing back up. There's a few almonds on the ground and, yeah, it's, you know, I guess you've got to be thankful you didn't lose a lot and, yeah, it could have been a lot worse.
Definitely. How's the harvest been going?
Yeah, it's been pretty good. This is actually my heaviest crop on these trees so far, but this year's a lot lighter because last year was bumper crop, which... Yeah, I don't mind a bit of a rest this year, but I might have to go and get a job vintage somewhere now.
Yeah.
But that's all right. There's plenty of work around, apparently. I just have someone telling me what to do.
Yeah. You can't be your own boss. Is that the case?
Yeah, well, see how we go. If the sweet corn gets moving, it might be all right. But you've always got a backup plan.
Definitely. Well, thank you so much for joining me this afternoon, Hayden.
No worries. Nice to chat.
That was Sunland stone fruit grower Hayden Rogers there talking about the storm that ripped through the Riverland area yesterday afternoon and sort of overnight there. So I hope everyone is staying safe in that area and that cleanup isn't too hard today. Now, also in the Riverland, staying in that region just for a little while longer, more than 200 drivers have been caught crossing from Victoria into the Riverland area carrying illegal fruit and vegetables. Authorities say they seized more than 300 kilograms of illegal produce between Christmas Eve and the 3rd of January. Primary Industries Minister David Basham says these breaches were disappointing given the current fruit fly eradication efforts across the state.
New from ABC Audio. Enjoy audiobooks like Sarah El Sayed's Muddy People.
Hermione was my favourite character because she was a girl and she had fuzzy hair just like me.
Whole Notes by Ed Ayres.
The only thing that did fit was music.
And Bruce Pascoe's Young Dark Emu.
Researchers estimate there were over 140 grasses harvested by Aboriginal people.
Beautifully narrated by the authors, these new ABC audiobooks are available to own from bookshops and online.
This is ABC Radio Adelaide, South Australia and Broken Hill with Megan Hughes.
Good afternoon. In another blow to the agriculture industry and consumers due to COVID-19, shoppers are being warned their favourite cuts of chicken are unlikely to be available in the coming weeks as another industry falls victim to COVID-related worker shortages. Jane McNaughton reports.
Did someone say KFC?
I don't care!
KFC fans are likely to be left having to lick their fingers as the fast food giant apologises for a reduced range of chicken available for purchase. The Australian branch of the company issued a statement this week citing supply chain and workforce problems for the lack of supply.
Rest assured, we're doing all we can to get back to frying everyone's faves as soon as possible. This isn't the way we wanted to start the year. Please be kind to each other and our staff as they do their best to provide the chicken we all love.
The nation's chicken supply continues to deteriorate daily, according to the Australian Chicken Meat Federation, with businesses in the supply chain experiencing increasing staff shortages and the number of birds unable to be processed growing. Executive Director Vivian Kite says consumers will miss out.
These staff shortages are being experienced right across the supply chain, but particularly impacting the processing and packing, distribution and transport of chicken. There are plenty of chickens out there on farms, just not enough people to collect them, process them and distribute products to stores. Staff shortages are particularly impacting the industry's ability to process chickens, and companies are having to drop some products in order to cope. Products that require more preparation or are the most labour-intensive to produce will be the first to go, whereas simpler, less labour-intensive products such as whole chickens should continue to be available.
Most major processors are operating with a reduction of up to 50% of their required staff. One of Australia's largest chicken meat processors, Ingham's, started noticing supply chain issues that were affecting sales back in December. Chief Executive Andrew Reeves said in a statement that many employees had been forced to isolate due to contracting the Omicron COVID variant in the community or being a close contact.
The operation and trading difficulties have resulted in significant inefficiency, additional cost and temporary suspensions of a number of Ingham's products. We are working closely with our customers and we are focused on supplying as much product as possible while the current disruption continues.
On Monday, the Commonwealth announced that workers who were close contacts of a COVID-positive case but were asymptomatic and returning negative rapid antigen tests would be able to return to work. Mr. Reeves welcomed the move, which is yet to be implemented by all states and will not include public-facing retail staff.
Changes to isolation rules for close contacts in the food sector should assist to alleviate some of our current staff shortages. As operating conditions begin to stabilise, we expect our production capacity to recover relatively quickly to meet customer and consumer demands.
Dr. Kite from the Chicken Meat Federation also endorsed the move to allow asymptomatic close contacts who are returning negative rapid antigen tests to come back to work, but is calling on the federal government to provide priority access to rapid antigen tests for businesses in the supply chain.
We strongly endorse the interim guidance released yesterday by the Australian Health Protection Principal Committee that would allow community contacts to return to our chicken supply chain workplaces if they are vaccinated, if they are COVID negative, and they're asymptomatic. The adoption of these principles would go some way to alleviating the current supply issues and help to get chicken back onto supermarket shelves and into other outlets.
But until then, fast food fans may need to fill up on potato and gravy.
Jane McNaughton with that report. Now, let me know if you're having any trouble finding your favourite cuts of chicken. Really would love to hear from you. My number is 0467 922 891. Send me a text, the number 0467 922 891. Now, meanwhile, keeping with this chicken story, we're going to go back onto farms because chicken producers say they just can't put the brakes on the supply of chickens as abattoirs struggle to process them. The problems in the supply chain mean there aren't enough staff to butcher chickens and prepare them for supermarkets and fast food chains. But it means that farmers who start the growing process months before they go to the abattoir now have to worry if there'll be a home for their birds when they're ready for market. Peter Somerville is speaking to Vincent Cross, the president of the Victorian Chicken Growers Council, who says it's getting stressful.
The chicken growing is like a juggernaut. It can't stop. So there's the eggs placed in hatcheries ready to hatch. The chickens in the field which are growing, and there's restraints on what kilos per square metre you can actually have on your farm, which are in line with the RSPCA standards. So they're always growing, they're never stopping. So the issues that the processor has is that you've got to get the chickens off the farm to process to meet his commercial contracts, and the other is to meet animal welfare standards. So there's a problem when processing slows down, like we currently have with COVID. I believe it's hit every processor to varying degrees. I know one processor in one of his plants is down by 50%. So, and I believe England is having similar issues. So basically what it means for the farmer is that the birds are continually growing, but they're left on the farm, and there's a juggling act going on between the processor and his requirements to meet animal welfare standards as well as to meet sales. But what it means for the farmer is we're growing the birds to a larger weight for a longer period of time and a shorter period of what we call a turnaround, which is between batches of chickens.
You mentioned that it could lead to animal welfare concerns. Will you see a backlog of chickens building up at your farm? Could it get to that, or is that happening yet?
No, they're managing it at the moment, and I think they're doing a pretty good job. What it means is that the way they're managing it is they'll come and take quite a few chickens while they're small, and then let those chickens grow out to a bigger average live weight, which will still meet animal welfare standards. But if it gets any worse, I'm sure the processors will have to go to the RSPCA, who controls the standard, and start asking for exemptions.
It sounds like really quite a stressful time for chicken growers. How are you all coping?
Well, it's as I said to my processor, it's been a pretty hard 6 months because of we're constantly working and not getting much of a break. Whilst practices prior to this latest outbreak were adequate, now we're finding that where the processor used to come in and take quite a few birds, they can't do that now because they can't process enough birds. So they're coming in more often, which means we're working nights more often than days because the chickens have to be looked after during the day as well. But the pickups actually happen at night time when it's dark. So I know that I worked fairly hard over the last two batches because I had a lot more night work, as well as having the chickens for longer, so I was working longer. And on one particular occasion, I had 4 days between the last chickens going off the farm and the next chickens coming on. So within that time frame, a farmer has to clean his farm, which means remove all the old bent litter, any maintenance. The sheds have to be washed down, sanitized. The new sawdust has to go in there, and then you've got to set up for the chicks. So even with a 7 day break, it can mean that you've virtually got no break at all.
That's Vincent Coaston, a chicken grower on the Mornington Peninsula in Victoria, and he is also the president of the Victorian Chicken Growers Council. And he was speaking there to Peter Somerville. Now, I've had some texts through about people struggling to find chicken. Ryan from Gulfview Heights says, yes, finding chicken was a bit tricky this week. He went to 3 supermarkets before finding some at the 3rd one. Also got another text through saying that the supermarket that they went to, they only had chicken wings. So it sounds like people are really struggling to find chicken already. Now, let me know if you've had any problems with it. My number is 0467 922 891. The number is 0467 922 891.
This is ABC Radio Adelaide, South Australia and Broken Hill with Megan Hughes.
It's 12 minutes to 1. Thank you for joining me. Now, you've heard about some of the supply issues, but the chair of the Australian Trucking Association says while it is frustrating that some shop shelves are bare, he's hopeful it won't be for too long. David Smith says there's been some issues with drivers having to isolate, which can cause problems down the line for deliveries of certain items.
There's no denying there's some shortages, and it's come about for several reasons, but
The prime reason, of course, is COVID. But it affects probably local drivers. Local drivers means, you know, delivery drivers around Adelaide and capital cities where they've got a lot more person-to-person contact. So there's quite a number of, or quite a proportion of those drivers that have tested positive and are therefore not working. But it also affects the people working in the DCs where staffing levels are way down. Distribution centres that are, that have got less than half their staff are working. But it also affects places like abattoirs and processing plants for the product to go to the DC. So it's pretty much across the board where it affects quite a large proportion of the, of all aspects of that whole delivery chain to the distribution centre, through the distribution centre, and, of course, product to the supermarket shelf on the long-haul trucks. Yeah.
We've seen with Tees in Narracourt and the issues that they're facing at the moment with workers testing positive. What sort of flow-on effect does, you know, having an abattoir which potentially might have to shut down, and there might be others as well, when it comes to drivers and particularly livestock transport?
Well, only last week we had a case. We had a B-double load of cattle that we loaded and they were going through to a Victorian abattoir. We got right around to Crystal Brook and the abattoir shut down. They didn't have enough staff left to operate the premises, and so at Crystal Brook we had to ring the driver and say, look, turn around and come back home. You know, those cattle weren't going to get processed. So, but naturally, going to what you were referring to, that is just the type of thing that affects the supply through the whole food chain, basically. Yeah, so there is certainly some, look, I'm not suggesting that we're not going to run out of food. It's not that at all. But there will be some empty spots on the supermarket shelf at various times where product can't be got through. But I'd suggest, you know, within a day or two that would be taken care of.
Are there concerns within the industry of people, that panic buying again that we saw earlier when COVID first started?
There hasn't been as much. There's been some on the Eastern Seaboard where, you know, people have got wind that there'll be a shortage of a given product and they've panic bought. But look, to put it really simply, that's actually the worst thing that can happen. I'd advise a bit of patience, try and source an alternative product if possible, and just a bit of patience to wait a couple of days, because the product will come through. It's just a time factor or a delay, if you like, through that whole food chain to get through to the shelf.
In terms of truck drivers and being able to access testing, how has that been going in the industry the last few weeks?
Well, obviously, I hate to say this, but the rules keep changing still. So we still get a almost daily change in the whole testing regime. But look, right at the moment, across borders, etc., there's no requirement to have permits or testing for that matter. Really, the main reason to get tested now, other than workplaces, I'll come back to that in a minute, is if you're showing symptoms. So if you're showing symptoms, certainly get a test, but there's actually no requirement or reason to get tested other than you're showing symptoms. But I can also say there's various workplaces that it's a requirement to test before entering the premises now. So it's sort of shifted a little bit from a requirement at borders to get tested every sort of 72 hours. That's sort of all dropped. But now we're finding we've actually got to get a test to enter a premises. So drivers are still getting tested almost daily, albeit that there's a lot more use of the, we call it the RATS test, the rapid antigen test, that's a lot simpler and easier, that's for sure.
That's Chair of the Australian Trucking Association, David Smith, speaking there with Brooke Neindorf.
Ready for some new adventures? Back Roads is back. From the macho mining town of Tom Price in WA to outback Queensland and Tasmania's Cradle Mountain, join me, Heather Hewitt, and some of my fellow guest explorers for a journey to some of this country's most remote towns, full of surprising and memorable characters.
All new Backroads. New adventures Monday nights on ABC TV and streaming on ABC iView.
This is ABC Radio Adelaide, South Australia and Broken Hill with Megan Hughes.
Well, it's hard to find an industry in the regions not impacted by the lack of working holidaymakers. Pre-pandemic, there are around 300,000 workers under the visa here every year. It's hard to imagine, but there was really that many. Now that Australia is opening back up to the world, the question remains, will we see the same amount return after turning the tap off for a full 2 years? Dr. Sarah Gardner from Griffith University in Queensland says we need to have a fresh look at the scheme to ensure the valuable workforce returns to our shores.
It's going to be a very competitive marketplace for these young visitors. A lot of different countries are going to be out trying to attract them back. So Australia's obviously going to hopefully be on the front foot. We've got a good reputation in terms of providing really great work and travel experience in Australia, but we can't sort of rest on our laurels. We need to make sure that we relook at the offer that we have for young people wanting to come here. Whether that's just the visas, but also working conditions, ease and freedom to be able to move around, but also the fun and excitement of combining that with an international travel experience.
And has the perception of Australia as a sort of working holiday destination, has that changed at all in the last 2 years of the pandemic and our response to it?
I think we're in a good position in the fact that we're seen as quite a safe country, both pre-pandemic, but even in the way that we've actually handled the pandemic now. So I think we're in a good position moving forward, but I think we need to make sure that we make the most of that, be on the front foot, get out there as soon as possible into international markets and tell the young people that Australia wants to bring these working holiday makers back.
And there already have been some changes made to the scheme. What exactly are they?
Well, probably the most exciting change recently has been the UK-Australia Free Trade Agreement, which has allowed our young people from the UK, as well as Australians wanting to head to the UK, the opportunity to continue that travel up to the age of 35. So previously it was only 30, moving that out to 35. And also the opportunity to stay here for up to 3 years and less conditions around the type of work that they do when they're here.
And what do you argue the government should be doing to sort of attract those hundreds of thousands of workers back here in 2022?
Yeah, I think it really requires a cross-government approach in terms of how we move forward. We need to really look at our visa policy and make sure that we're the most competitive and offering the best we can in terms of our visas. We also need to make sure that we've got great international campaigns to really tell people that we're open for business and that they need to come back and have a working holiday and travel experience in Australia. But also from a supply side, we need to make sure that our industry is reset and ready to host these working holiday makers. What we've seen during the pandemic is particularly the accommodation, so a lot of youth hostel accommodation and what we call backpacker accommodation may have been used for other purposes during the pandemic. So we need to make sure we've got that budget accommodation option really set up. Great transport systems. Also, the pandemic's meant that some of the main suppliers of distribution, so the people that sell these working holiday experiences and make it easy for working holiday makers to come here, some of them are not around anymore. So we need to make sure the full system in which they come to Australia and they move around Australia is really ready to go.
So traditionally, where have most of the working holiday makers in Australia come from?
So traditionally, they've come out of the United Kingdom, France and Germany. They've represented about a third of our working holiday visas. But what we can see moving forward is the Asian market's really developing, particularly the opportunity to combine work, travel and study. So we see about 29% of working holiday maker visas are now coming out of Japan, China and South Korea. And I think as we reopen on the side of this pandemic is the opportunity to really grow that Asian working holiday maker market.
And recently we've had some big changes, particularly in agriculture, with the Fair Work Commission ruling there needs to be a sort of a basic minimum wage when you're earning a piece rate. Do you think things like that will encourage more people to come?
Yeah, I think we've got to be on the front foot in terms of that. Interestingly, people are really concerned and want people to come to Australia and have fair working conditions for people to be paid reasonably. So I think looking at the actual work conditions and how we actually communicate that to young people internationally about the fairness and the equity and the wage conditions in Australia is really important as part of that message.
So basically, we can't just rest on our laurels and expect all of those people to come back after, 2 years of no working holiday makers.
Yeah, absolutely. We need, it's not just going to be back to business as usual. We need to really rethink the way in which we put together the working holiday maker experience and then communicate that to people, young people internationally. I think there needs to be a really new and different and fresh approach to this.
That is Dr. Sarah Gardner, the Acting Director for the Griffith Institute for Tourism at Griffith University. And that's about all we have time for today. But I just want to read a couple more texts that I got through regarding chicken shortages. One said, Peter from Boolaroo said, will customers be crying foul if they can't get their chicken from the fast food outlets? And someone else asked, if you can't get the chicken, eat Corellas. They're in plague proportions. But I think I'll be sticking to the chicken there. Thank you so much for joining me this afternoon. Now, any more rural news and information, you can get that on the website. News is coming up next. It's about 1 o'clock. Discover more great ABC podcasts, live radio and exclusives on the ABC Listen app.